Now, from Mayo Clinic, it's Medical Edge Weekend, the only show that gives you the chance to ask your questions to Mayo Clinic experts. Plus, we'll take you beyond the headlines for in-depth discussions of what developments in medicine mean to you. Information you want from specialists who know. Join the conversation by phone, through our blog, or on Twitter by going to radio.mayoclinic.org. Now, with this week's program, here are your hosts, Dr. Tom Shives and Tracy McRae.
From the Mayo Clinic Rochester, Minnesota campus, I'm Tracy McRae.
And I'm Dr. John Ebert, filling in for Dr. Tom Shives.
Welcome, everyone, to Medical Edge Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Meditation. Once upon a time, it was called New Age or a fringe type of oddity. Then Western medicine discovered some of the benefits of meditation, and it fell under the heading of alternative medicine. These days, alternative medicine is known as complementary medicine. Mayo Clinic has its own division of CIM, that's complementary and integrative medicine, including and studying things like biologically based practices, manipulative and body-based and energy medicine, and mind-body medicine.
So today on Medical Edge Radio, we're going to talk about meditation with the Director of Research and Practice in Complementary and Integrative Medicine, Dr. Amit Sood. We've got a lot of ground to cover, lots of mind to cover. How does one learn to meditate, we wonder? What are the benefits? Should meditation still be considered New Age, or is it now mainstream?
Maybe we'll even start our own meditation practice, Dr. Ebert.
Today we will.
Later on in the hour, we're going to talk with one of the presenters at the Meeting of the Minds Dementia Conference that's happening in St. Paul. We're going to find out more about a phrase that I just learned preparing for this called person-centered living. And we'll hear from her in about half an hour. But first, let's introduce our guest for the hour, Dr. Amit Sood. Good morning, Dr. Sood.
Good morning, Tracy. Delighted to be here.
I'm so happy to have you here. Ever since the last time the Dalai Lama was in Rochester, and I watched a conference that the two of you were putting on YouTube. I watched it live streaming, hooray for technology. And I thought, we need to talk about meditation on Medical Edge. So I'm glad that you accepted our invitation.
Thank you. That was a wonderful experience. I have very warm memories of that.
I would hope so. What's it like to go to lunch with the Dalai Lama?
It's like being with your very old, very wise grandpa. He's funny and present and kind.
That's good.
That's a unique combination.
I could strive to be that way. Present and kind, that would be good.
Cut the caffeine.
Well, that might be tough for me. Let's talk about meditation, Dr. Sood. What is meditation?
Well, meditation is a group of practices that train your mind to be more focused, more relaxed, more compassionate, and more non-judgmental. Ordinary states of the mind have our mind wandering about half of the day. 50% of the time, our mind is not where we are physically. What meditation does is it helps you arrive in the moment. It gets you relaxed. I don't know if anyone who has meditated to get more tense. It gets you more focused. It trains your attention. And it regulates your emotions so that you're more compassionate and more accepting of the present moment as it is.
It's only 50% of the time that my mind is wandering. It feels like it's almost 100% of the time.
It may be higher for you.
Is it higher for women than for men? We were just talking about this with a group of friends, that men seem to have a time when they can say, I'm really thinking about nothing actually right now. But women have an ongoing, constant loop of material going in their head. Or is it both men and women?
The mind wanders for both men and women, but women tend to have more open files. Mind wanders into open files, all the unresolved issues, and because women are often handling more stuff, the mind may wander more in them.
I like that I've got open issues, calling it that instead.
And there must be some degree that's dependent upon stress level. Perhaps stress detracts from the moment, and when we're always thinking about the future, stressed about things that are coming up, it's more difficult and challenging to be mindful and in the moment and meditative.
Absolutely. So there's a network in the brain that hosts our mind wandering. It's called the default network. When you have high stress or post-traumatic stress disorder, this network is very active. Research shows that we spend about two-thirds of the time when our mind wanders, it is actually focusing on neutral or negative thoughts. So stress does predispose to mind wandering.
Two-thirds of the time when it's wandering, so two-thirds of the 50% of the time, it's negative thoughts that are going.
Neutral or negative, but mostly negative.
That's impressive. And does meditation, okay, so it calms your mind, but does it help you to turn that figure around so that maybe you don't spend so much time on negative thought as well?
Precisely. That is exactly what we are trying to do. Not only when you're meditating, but throughout the day, you get better control over your attention. So you pick your mind's wandering sooner, and you are able to bring that into the present moment or redirect that wandering to something more positive.
So one of the things I wonder is meditation an ends to, is it a means to an end? That is, through meditation, I can achieve this particular outcome, or is meditation an activity in and of itself?
Both. It is like physical exercise. Now, if you're training to be an Olympic champion, it may be an end in itself, but for someone like you and me, where we are running our life and handling 50 things, meditation can make us more effective in what we do. So it is a means to that end.
Can we go back to the beginning when we were first introducing this, and it has been my experience over the last few weeks when I say the guest that we have coming up is going to talk about meditation, that some folks kind of go, interesting. They don't really mean it. You can tell by their face. They think that it's kind of goofy, as I had said, like kind of new age or fringe type of activity. And can you just kind of give me some of the history of meditation and how it came to now it is part of Mayo Clinic's SIM area, the complementary and integrative medicine. So give me the dummies case of the dummies network on this one. How do I get me up to speed?
So meditation is where physical exercise was 50 years ago. Now, if you put on your sneakers and go around jogging, nobody will look at you with curious eyes. This is how meditation is. And Max Planck said something very interesting many years ago. Science changes funeral by funeral. So as we learn, as we grow, as our minds change, we adopt new techniques. Meditation has been around. It is older than, I think, the oldest redwood trees, several thousand years, mm-hmm. Much before we began to patent anything. Mm-hmm. So nobody really lays claim to it. But given all that history of meditation, it was still confined more to the eastern right. part of the world. But over the last few hundred years, meditation has traveled west with more migration. Mm-hmm. And over the last 50 years or so, we have researched and found that it benefits many conditions. And particularly in the last 10 years, we are seeing phenomenal changes in the brain that happen with meditation. And so it is no longer voodoo or a mystical thing. Mm-hmm. It is real life, and it can help enhance your quality of life and well-being.
If it's becoming part of Western medicine, that must mean that there is some evidence that meditation helps, because usually isn't that what it takes for it to become part of Western medicine?
We usually like to see some clinical
right.
evidence of efficacy
right.
right before we take
Absolutely.
It into clinical practice.
So yes, there is a large amount of evidence. Over 1,000 studies have been done on meditation to test its value in diseases ranging from memory loss to improving attention to patients with heart disease, stroke, high blood pressure, asthma, chronic pain, back pain, rheumatologic conditions. And I would say of the data that I have reviewed, more than 90% of the studies show benefit of meditation, particularly for stress, anxiety, and other measures. But in some situations, it can even alter the course of disease.
So when you when a patient comes in with that whole laundry list, one of the whole laundry list of things that you just mentioned, whether it's pain or stress management or blood pressure, you know, whatever these different things are, do you find that patients are eager to try meditation, or do people still say, is there a medication I could take before we start in with meditation? How eager are people to be part of, to incorporate meditation into their life?
I think people are quite eager. Of course, we see people who are already interested and willing to incorporate this, and so my practice is biased. But in general, my observation is people are very interested and curious, and at this point, meditation has been embraced as a secular practice that can really help them.
Did you have another question you wanted to ask?
No.
All right, well then let's take a break. Our guest is meditation expert Dr. Amit Sood. It's time for a short break. And coming up, myth or matter of fact, meditation is like hypnotizing yourself. Is that myth or matter of fact? We'll get the answers coming up.
And right after the news at the bottom of the hour, we'll take your questions for meditation expert Dr. Amit Sood at 507-282-1234. or you can contact us by going to our Mayo Medical Edge radio website, radio.mayoclinic.org.
Or you can contact us by Twitter at hashtag Mayo Radio. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Dr. Emmett Sood is here, and we are talking, well, we're talking about a lot of stuff during the break, but we're going to talk about meditation this hour, and we'll be taking your questions, if you have one, in about 15 or 20 minutes. Do you have a lot of questions, Dr. Ebert?
I have tons. I hope we can get to them all.
Well, the first thing that I want to do is go over our myth or matter of fact, and that question was, myth or matter of fact, Dr. Sood, meditation is like hypnotizing yourself.
Hypnosis and meditation have several things in common. One is they're both focused. They both involve a specific focus, and people are relaxed during both the practices. But hypnosis entails enhanced suggestibility, and you're willing to take suggestion from somebody to change your behavior. So tobacco cessation and many of the addictions, hypnosis is used. Meditation is a state of mind where you're really focusing to be more compassionate, accepting, content, more in the present moment. So they are similar, but not really the same.
We did get a tweet. Someone, you can hashtag Mayo Radio, send us your tweets, and someone already asked a question. What if I fall asleep while I'm meditating? What does that mean?
That's not necessarily a bad thing, because let's count our success. If you're falling asleep, that means you're relaxed.
Sure.
That means your wandering mind was able to quiet down for a short period of time. But yes, sleeping is not entirely meditation, though I sometimes call it sleepitation when I try to sleep and meditate at the same time. So if you're falling asleep, a couple of things to do is, one is try to have light stomach, time your meditation at a time when you're more likely to be awake, splash your face with water, if you can do that. Relax before your meditation practice, and try not to be sleep deprived as much as you can. Keep your back straight, because it is very difficult to be asleep with your back really totally straight. Try not to meditate lying down. So those are some of the ideas.
All right. And I don't know, when I think about the meditation that I do, when I do yoga, that Shavasana pose, you are laying flat on your back. And so that's maybe not the best time to do some meditation.
I agree. And in every class that we take, say 20 or 30 people, within 2 or 3 or 4 minutes of us starting a meditation or meditation-like practice, you hear someone snoring, and snoring pretty loud. And that's a very sweet voice. We love to hear that. If we don't hear that, we have failed.
Are there different types of meditation and different indications for trying to suggest that people should try these different types of medications clinically?
Yeah, so I see meditation as a little bit like ice cream. You've got so many different flavors of ice cream, and it's good to have those flavors to meet your interest. But the basis of those ice cream is those cows that are grazing in Wisconsin and Iowa, and we should be grateful for them. So similarly, meditation has multiple types. Broadly, there are three groups of meditation to classify them. One is attention-based meditation, where you direct your attention to a chosen object, internal or external, or a thought, image, or sound. And this is again divided into focused attention and open monitoring. But so the first is attention-based. The second is emotion-based, where you cultivate purposefully a positive emotion, particularly emotion like compassion or love or kindness. And then third is introspective meditation, where you pick a thought or idea and really try to go deep into it to try to understand it, thought like love or thought like peace or suffering. There's also a fourth group of practices where In general, walking meditation and other practices like Tai Chi or Qigong, or even progressive muscular relaxation, where meditation is incorporated as a part of practice.
Isn't the labyrinth, the walking labyrinth that you can do, that's a type of meditation, isn't it?
Absolutely. So what you're doing there is bringing your attention to the present moment. You're trying to relax, and you're trying to think something or focus on something positive. That is the state of mind which is meditative.
What is the walking labyrinth?
You don't know what that is? We actually have one at our church that is right up the street, but that's because there was a gal who was going through breast cancer treatment, and she did walking meditation to help her with her breast cancer pain. And when she was succumbing to that disease, they began putting one of these in near our church so that people at our church, my kids love it. They, of course, they go on, they run full speed on it. But what it is a circular path, basically, and it just weaves back and forth and all around like a labyrinth, and you just walk it slowly, one foot in front of the other, very slowly, and you're supposed to meditate while you're doing it. That would be the act of meditation.
Allow me to ask a silly question.
Sure.
When you fly, do you carry all your luggage on your head, or do you check it in?
Well, now that the baggage fees are so... No, I do check it.
Check it in. So that's good, right? That's healthy, and I do the same. But our mind carries all the load inside the head all the time. The load of the past, the load of the future. So when you're walking in that labyrinth, you're checking in your baggage. It's not Pollyanna. You're not saying everything is hunky-dory, but you've chosen to check in your baggage for a short period of time so that you can have peace.
I was just going to say, what about yoga then? Is yoga considered a type of moving meditation?
Yes. Yoga, Tai Chi, Qigong, they would all be moving meditation. A higher step of yoga, of course, incorporates meditation itself.
Gotcha.
So it's physiologic and psychologic. Meditation is both.
Yes, it is. It is basically you are manipulating or you're influencing, training your brain's way to attend. Our attention is very short these days. We are in the midst of attention deficit epidemic in some ways, and what meditation does is it helps us have a deeper, sustained attention to a chosen object, and that has phenomenal influence on our brain. It recarves brain pathways. It gets us relaxed. It makes us more efficient and productive.
So we're going to talk specifically about how you can begin to meditate. So we'll give people, you know, the five things that they should do if they've never meditated before, what they should be doing. We'll do that right after the bottom of the hour here. But I wanted to know, as we were talking about, I have tried to do meditation when I'm doing the yoga. The hardest part about yoga is completely clearing the mind. So I was very happy when I was researching our conversation today that you don't have to necessarily completely wipe your mind clean. And you said that the Dalai Lama is the same thing, that he is an introspective type of meditator. So tell me more about that conversation that you had with the Dalai Lama about his meditation practice.
Yeah, so when he was here, I asked the audience, in this 500 August people sitting in the audience, how many meditate, and about two-thirds raised their hand. And then I asked them, how easy is it for you to meditate? Did anyone find it like a piece of cake? Not a single, I think one hand went up. Mm-hmm. And then also he put his hand down.
Mm-hmm.
So then I asked His Holiness Dalai Lama, why is it that meditation is so difficult, and he acknowledged that it is because of our very active mind. So waiting for the day when your mind will be totally quiet will be a very long time, and we don't need to. It is the same thing as physical exercise. You don't need to run 10 miles or lift 200 pounds right away. You start somewhere, and even if you've made a little gain and brought your mind to a little period of rest, I think you're good.
And people talk about their yoga practice, you know, how's your practice going? And we could talk about meditative practice the same way, you know. And I don't know if we have those conversations with our patients, but I think the more that you do it, the better that you can become at it.
Absolutely. Meditation is not a diagnosis. It's not like you get it. It's not,
yeah.
It's not, you know, either you have
you
diabetes,
have meditation or you don't.
Yeah. It's not all or none. It's not, right. It's not male, female. It is a practice. It's a lifestyle. It's a bit like food for the mind, if you will. So you can have a little bit of it, more of it, or none of it, depending on how you like.
And when we're training for our meditation, because that's what it is, it's not the marathon race that you run, it's the training to get to that point. How much meditation should we do every day when we start our meditation practice, when we start our training?
I'll start with 10 to 15 minutes every day. Mm-hmm. About that would be a good starting point. Studies show that it takes about 15 to 20 minutes of practice to mm-hmm. really bring out the beneficial effects of meditation on your autonomic nervous system. So that's how I would start, about 15 minutes a day.
So when you have a clock going then when you meditate? I mean, because focusing on a clock is sort of antithetical to this concept of
right.
focusing in. Or how do you, you just do it?
If you have a sense for time. That is one way. You can have your loved one or somebody, you know, knock at your door. It's important for you to be really in a quiet, safe place and a place where you feel secure, where you don't have to, so you lock your door from inside.
Not have children running around.
At least not on your chest. They could be running around and you can't avoid it sometimes.
Right.
So you may set an alarm clock or something. I have known people who have slept off during meditation and they sent me not an angry email, but a gentle email that I had a very restful sleep. But by the way, I got late for work.
I have another myth or matter of fact for you. Meditation can slow down aging. That might catch people's attention. Is that a myth or is that a fact?
I think saying a fact is a big deal, but I think it is close to being a fact. I'm reminded of actually two studies. In one study, they compared the brain function of people who had meditated for quite a period of time, and they compared that with those who were not meditating of the same age or 25 years younger people. So 50 years meditative, 50 years non-meditators, and 25 years young people not meditating. The brain efficiency of meditators who were 50 years old was equal to that of 25-year-olds.
Uh-huh.
So we know that look at the opposite of meditation or any other such mind-body practice.
Warriors.
What stress does to your body? Your body is about 15 years biologically older. Your telomeres are shorter if you have chronic stress.
Well, you're listening to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Radio. Our guest is meditation expert and going to teach us a little bit of meditation here in a minute or two, Dr. Amit Sood. Coming up this week's Health and Medical News with Vivian Williams. And right after that, we're going to take your phone calls at 507-282-1234, comments from our website at radio.mayoclinic.org, and we're already getting tweets at hashtag Mayo Radio. This is Medical Edge Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network.
Hi, I'm Vivian Williams with a look at health and medical news. Oh no, you're scheduled to have a test because you have certain symptoms. Your doctor says even though your risk is low, it could be something serious, and he or she wants to check just to be sure. Now, for lots of people, that test scenario is a cause of great worry. Well, researchers from Scotland did a review of medical literature to learn about the relationship between diagnostic tests and worry about sickness among people who were not likely to have something really serious wrong with them. They found the tests for symptoms with low risk of serious illness don't do much as far as decreasing worry and anxiety or resolving symptoms, but they may reduce future doctor visits. And here's more info about diagnostic tests that may cause worry for some people. Many physicians have long believed that the use of intravenous contrast agents for CT scans can cause acute kidney injury. New Mayo Clinic research questions the strength of this causal link, and the findings from two studies are published online in the journal Radiology. Here's Dr. Bob McDonald.
So we decided to basically rerun an analysis on a much larger scale using Mayo Clinic data to compare people who didn't get contrast with their CT to those that did, and compare the rates of kidney injury immediately following their CT scans. We were able to find that the incidence of acute kidney injury was no different between the patients who received contrast and the patients who didn't. And this suggests that contrast itself may not be the cause of what we're observing as renal injury following these CT scans. We believe that intravenous contrast material used for CT scanning is much safer than what is suggested based upon prior guidelines. However, we do believe that before we can say it's completely safe for all patients, we need to do a prospective randomized study, as this is the definitive study of safety.
Now, childhood obesity. It's well known it can have negative long-term effects. So why are some schools reducing physical education classes to devote more time to the three R's? Reading, writing, and arithmetic. Well, new research suggests they should add physical education as the fourth R, reading, writing, arithmetic, and aerobics. A study in the Journal of Pediatrics looked at the association between standardized test scores and body mass index, or BMI. They found aerobically fit kids had a better chance of passing math and reading tests than kids who weren't physically fit. They also found BMI did not have a significant effect on academic success. So, their research shows that aerobic fitness fitness can have a greater effect on academic performance than weight does. And a study author says schools who sacrifice physical activity time to get more seat time for math and reading instruction could potentially be pursuing a counterproductive approach. And that's a look at health and medical news. I'm Vivian Williams.
Welcome back to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Radio, information you want from specialists who know, on air, online, and on iHeartRadio. You can listen through our flagship station, KROC-AM.
And now it's time for you to join our conversation. You can contact us by at telephone number 507-282-1234, or you can contact us by going to our website, radio.mayoclinic.org, or you can tweet us at hashtag MayoRadio.
You can tweet us anytime. We've actually got quite a few tweets already lined up that we'll get to in just a moment. But first, this weekend, the Meeting of the Minds Dementia Conference is being held in St. Paul, Minnesota. The conference is a joint effort of the Alzheimer's Association and Mayo Clinic, who are working together to create a day that is designed to inform, equip, and support help the support persons of people with dementia. Joining us now is one of the presenters from today's conference, the founder of the Consumer Consortium on Assisted Living. It's a group that focuses on person-centered living. I've never heard that phrase before. Karen Love is on the line. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning.
Tell me, what is person-centered living?
Yes, each individual is autonomous and has their own individuality. And so often when we talk about care and services and supports, we do it as a kind of group think. And what our movement is about is really to raise awareness and kind of bring us back to the holisticness and individual nature of each individual. Each one has their own experience.
And as a patient would begin to advance through dementia and Alzheimer's, you know, whatever their diagnosis is, I would suspect that becomes more and more important for them and for the people who love them.
Absolutely, critically important. And actually, it's the foundation of well-being as they journey through this illness. So often we feel that they're nothing but losses, but if you focus on the individual and things that were important and meaningful to them, you really can still find that person that's still in there. For example, somebody who played the trumpet. They may not be able to string together a whole sentence, but if you hand them a trumpet, they could play, you know, a beautiful song. So, it's very important for that personhood.
So, Karen, what is the topic of your presentation later today?
Well, I've actually got two topics today. They're keeping me busy. The first one is on therapeutic engagement, which really gets to the heart of this person-centeredness is, you know, how do we bring out the best, a strength-based approach in individuals who have Alzheimer's and related dementias? And then the second one is talking about what are we doing about all of this on a national level? How do we connect the research and the practice information we have to shape and inform policies. So a lot of exciting things going on.
As I was reading a little bit about you, some of the web pages that I found associated to you, you have a little bit to say about how the Affordable Care Act can fit into this. And as we move through a new age for healthcare in this country, how does the Affordable Care Act and person-centered living get together? How does that work?
Oh, I'm glad you asked, because that's something that really gets buried and we don't realize. In 2001, the Institute on Medicine released a landmark report called Crossing the Quality Chasm. And one of the things that it called for was a shift away from the traditional medical disease-centered approach to a person-centered one. And in the last 12 years, as a country, we've really not done a good job of shifting away. And in the Affordable Care Act, it resurrects that language. And through the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, they are now starting to tag and tie in reimbursement for services. Providers have to demonstrate that they are providing them in a person-centered way. So it's very important.
Why are, I know there's over a thousand people expected at this conference today. It's going on at this very moment, actually, so we appreciate that you stepped away to speak with us. Why are conferences like this so important for that those support people of people with Alzheimer's and related dementias?
Because they know what they know, just, you know, a small microcosm of their world. But when the energy here is just terrific. I mean, you walk the halls and it's uplifting, it's inspiring. Pat Summitt's speak earlier this morning, the winningest coach in basketball, and you just feel that energy and enthusiasm about somebody of her stature taking that energy and now focusing it on Alzheimer's awareness. But you realize you're not in this alone. There are lots of people out there that care. And it helps you feel that there is a connection and a base, and things really are happening on a high level.
I would add that if there are people listening who have someone in their life that has had this diagnosis, that they should look up Karen Love online, because there's a lot of things that I found associated with you that I think people would find very helpful, Karen. So thank you for your time today, and we hope you have a good presentation later on.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Bye-bye. We're speaking about meditation. It all kind of works together here. Isn't that neat how that
all
works, guys?
Bring it
with
back home.
Dr. Amit Sood. And we're talking about a lot of the Twitter questions that are coming in we'll go to, but we also would like your phone calls at 507-282-1234. Let's just go through a couple of these tweets at hashtag Mayo Radio. It's National Eating Disorders Week. Can you talk about meditation for eating disorder recovery? Have you approached that yet, Dr. Sood?
Yes, actually, we are doing one study to help adolescents lose weight who are significantly overweight or obese, along with their parents. We eat for four reasons. We eat for the biological reason. Mm-hmm. We eat because food tastes good. I'm sure you do that, Dr. Eber. We engage in emotional eating almost every day sometimes, and we eat out of habit. Just because food is around us. And there's a lot of data that supports it. What controls our eating is self-regulation, our ability to stop ourselves from engaging in eating, which is not really for biological or nourishment. And meditation helps with enhancing self-regulation and self-efficacy. Eating disorders are also associated with anxiety, feeling incomplete in yourself, needing something external to soothe your inner being. And meditation can substitute for food.
Sure.
And there is some data that it can help with eating disorders and also with tobacco cessation.
Excellent.
And it brings us all around to this sense of mindfulness, right? I mean, I think that we do a lot of mindless eating. If, you know, I think there have been studies that have shown that if we consume fewer calories if we're not distracted while we're eating. And there's this mindfulness about eating too.
Yes. When we are in the present, we are more likely to be in control of our thoughts and actions. And that makes us better self-regulated. Studies have shown people who are more mindful exercise more, eat healthier, and also choose their calories better, because we are inundated with calorie-dense, energy-rich food. And it takes tremendous, tremendous self-control to be able to sustain weight loss.
All right. Hashtag Mayo Radio. Is there a better time of day for meditation?
I would say early morning is the best time. That is the time when you have fewer thoughts. It's almost like at the end of the day, just as a car, when it comes from a long trip, it has got a lot of dust on it. Similarly, our mind picks up a lot of dust from the world, and it is difficult to be in that meditative spirit. So the best time is early morning. Before going to sleep at night also helps, because that decreases pre-sleep cognitions and helps you sleep better.
And does music add any benefit? That person also wants to know. They use music for meditation. Is that a distraction or does it help?
Oh, it helps. It helps a lot. I love music. Meditation with music is wonderful. An external focus like this, which is, of course, you don't want very energizing music that gets you rocking, but music that is soothing, reminds you of peace and calm, externalizes your attention, gets you out of your default mode, and anchors you.
Dr. Ebert brought in his meditation music.
What about this sort of music?
But this has got a woman talking to you. Does that help?
It depends. My personal preference is no human voice.
Okay.
I just want music. And this is good music. It could put me to sleep, though.
We need to get past her talking and then just go into the music, that's all.
All right.
All right. We have a tweet, how does one begin meditating? Do you have techniques you recommend? So let's get into the meat and potatoes of how do we start our meditation for the first time ever?
Sure. I think the first is set intention, prioritize, set your goal. Why am I doing this? And have very clear idea for that. You're not likely to see stars or have a high experience right away. It takes time. So be realistic. Inventory your day and find when you can carve out 5 or 10 minutes during the day, when you can realistically take out time from your world and sit by yourself. And then for the technique itself, nothing is better than having an in-person instruction with somebody. Short of that, reading a good book helps. There are multiple meditation apps, and you can find some of the better ones. Community ed centers, I know our community ed center teaches meditation classes or local healthcare facilities, or even a personal trainer if you're ready for that.
YouTube videos, you have to be careful of the content.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. I think there are many medical centers now that are launching validated meditation programs. And
so go to the experts.
Yeah, exactly. I think that would save you a lot of time.
And the ultimate goal is not to completely clear your mind so that you don't think about a single thing for 15 or 20 minutes, right? It's just to kind of calm it all down?
The ultimate goal is to begin to clear your mind.
Right.
I think the idea that we will completely clear our mind is unlikely to happen anytime soon. Mind was not built to be cleared. It does serve purpose. It does run our life. And well, if that happens for a brief period of time, that's okay, but that's not the idea.
All right. We should mention pain, because one of the reasons we got to this topic at all is that Dr. Ebert was here about a month ago talking about painkiller addiction. And some people actually sent us tweets or called in asking about other things that you can do besides painkillers, and if they're nervous about that. So I like how this is all coming together. And how does meditation work for dealing with pain?
Our brain has natural anti-pain chemicals that brain releases, like endorphins and opiates. And meditation helps with release of them. It decreases our central sensitization to pain. So some people have, those who have chronic stress, their pain centers are more active. So meditation calms those centers down. And it also decreases the negative perception of pain, because those pain centers are regulated by executive areas of the brain. And meditation enhances activity there. So there have been multiple studies that have shown that meditation can really decrease the dose of your painkillers and decrease the negative meaning that pain brings sometimes.
And of course, with the opioid epidemic that we have, we know now that this is a serious problem for a lot of our patients, and there's a lot of overdosing going on, and you can't overdose on meditation.
if you fall asleep, maybe that's overdosing on meditation.
You're not likely to get, GI upset or drug rash.
Right.
There's no copay you have to give.
That's exactly right. It's free.
You can perhaps decrease the dose of your opioids or other medications. That would be a very valid goal to achieve.
I found a great quote that has to do with meditation and pain, and it is that we may not be able to remove the pain always, but we can get rid of the suffering all the time. Oh, that was said by you. I found that you had said that, and I thought, that's great.
I think I retweeted it from somebody else. But anytime you experience pain has, so if you have 4 units of physical pain, to that gets added 3 units of emotional pain. So then it becomes a total 7 units of pain. And physical pain makes emotional pain worse. Emotional pain makes physical pain worse. So you can at least take away that 3 units of emotional pain, cut down the 4 units of physical pain to 2, so your total pain is down significantly.
So let me ask you about your personal meditative practices. And how did you start? When did you start? And what do you do now?
I started very early. I was early teens. I actually didn't even know I was meditating. I was bringing my attention to a particular point and trying to keep it there as a medical student, age 16, 17, somewhere there, to be able to perform better and remember things better. And my present practice is, the first thing I do is when I sit, like as of this morning, I assign a meaning to it. Because anything, man is a meaning-seeking species. Anything we do, if there's a positive meaning, we are likely to do it. I think about 300,000 babies who are going to be born today. And I believe that my practice will help those babies in some way. give them more love, give them more peace in life. So that's how I start. The advantage of that is if I waver, then I just slap myself. I feel guilty. I'm not helping those babies, and I come back to the center. So I really, really emphasize people having a meaning to their practice. Then I think about kind beings on our planet, and there are plenty, plenty of them. And I think about those helping me, and blessing the world in this process. Then I bring my attention to breath. And by this time, I'm very relaxed and feeling good. I bring my attention to breath and stay with my breath for a few minutes. And after that, I bring my attention to my heart. And there I cultivate positive feelings of love. I do have a word that I sometimes visit, and I stay with that feeling and or word for a period of time. Eventually, not every day, but some days I'm able to reach a deeper place. It's a very relaxed feeling.
Is that a mantra? The word that you repeat? Yeah, what's a mantra?
Mantra is a sacred word that you can pick or is given to you that aligns with your worldview of and who you are, that will evoke a kind, nurturing feelings in you. So it's a comfort. It's like your blankie or a teddy bear. So our 8-year-old sleeps with a teddy bear, and that is your mantra.
And it can deepen your meditative practice or can keep you there.
It is your companion.
Your anchor. Yeah,
it's
okay.
Your anchor. It's your companion. It's your friend.
We have less than a minute left, but we just got a tweet. How do you use meditation to control your emotion in the moment?
I like it.
How does that work?
Meditation prepares you to deal with emotion when it comes. Meditation gives you that self-regulation control. You can revert back to breath or a positive feeling of love and kindness when you get that negative emotion. You sometimes keep an image of meditation, and when the negative emotion comes, you go back to that image and reframe yourself to better engage with the present moment.
And just like practicing for an athletic event, the more that you do it, the easier it would be to do that.
That's right. You play baseball, you start getting better with time.
All right. Can you tell us again, if we want to start meditating, I know I have to sit up straight. What else do I need to do?
Find a place that is quiet, mm-hmm. Where you feel safe, where you'll be comfortable, sit up straight, read upon a book or talk to somebody who meditates, pick up an idea, start with breath. I think that'll be a good idea, and focus on inhalation, exhalation of your breath at the tip of your nose, making it more and more subtle.
Dr. Amit Sood, thank you so much for being here today. Go ahead.
A delight to be here.
Great. And thank you for filling in for Dr. Shives.
This has been awesome. Thank you.
He should be back next week.
He doesn't need to be. I'm happy.
That's true. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about what's going to be happening next. And thanks to everyone in our audience for listening. A special thanks to those who tweeted into the conversation. We appreciate hearing from you. You're listening to Medical Edge Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Coming up, we'll talk about next week's program. Stay with us. Welcome back. Next week on Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Radio, Dr. Tom Shives will be back, and we'll talk about anxiety with Dr. Stephen Whiteside. Did you love how this is all getting pulled together, Dr. Ebert?
It's all coming together, and that's because you put together great shows.
Well, we started with painkiller addiction with you. We start to deal with it with meditation with Dr. Sood, and then anxiety with Dr. Whiteside. I know that it's a problem that people have, and you can have debilitating anxiety. I know that this is something that you work with in your practice as well.
We all have some degree of anxiety. It's about controlling it.
And some more than others, of course. Yep. And there's lots of different ways to control it. So that's what we're going to be talking about, dealing with and coping with and handling anxiety when we have Dr. Stephen Whiteside joining us next week. I certainly hope that you'll join us. And thank you again for filling in for Dr. Shives. I appreciate it.
Anytime. I'm happy to be your guest host, wing person.
I can put that bat signal up and you'll come running in. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Well, next week we'll talk anxiety with Dr. Whiteside, and we hope that you will join us. For more information on topics discussed on this program, please visit our website, radio.mayoclinic.org.
Or you can visit us at mayoclinic.com, where over 3,000 physicians, scientists, and researchers from Mayo Clinic share their expertise to empower you to manage your health.
You've been listening to Medical Edge Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Our senior producer is Ron Petrovich. Our associate producer and phone screener is Audrey Castletine. Our technical director is Kim David. Our theme music was written and performed by Chip Davis of Mannheim Steamroller, except for that little bit of yoga music
Wasn't that meditation music
we had in there.
I love that.
For Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Radio, I'm Tracy McRae.
Thanks for listening.
Any medical information conveyed during this program is not intended as a substitute for personal medical advice, and you should not take any action before consulting a healthcare professional. For more information, please go to our website, radio.mayoclinic.org. Please join us each week on this station for more of the medical information you want from Mayo Clinic specialists who know.